right. Welcome to episode 3 of the Beer Pinions podcast. My name is Patrick Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's. And with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, doing well, doing well. Enjoying this long summer, you know?
First day of fall.
But it can't still good beer drinking weather.
Although for sure. Definitely helping the beer garden business.
Yeah.
God bless America. So today's topic is beer education. And brought in a friend of mine, Mr. Pat Fahey. He is a master Cicerone and the content director at the Cicerone program. Welcome, Pat.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Oh, my pleasure, Pat. This won't get confusing.
No.
The Cicerone program, let's start there. Could you give us a little rundown about what you guys do there?
Sure. So the Cicerone certification program was started by Ray Daniels, end of 2007, beginning of 2008. And we started administering exams in 2008. Basically, the goal of the program is to act as a certification body for professionals within the beer industry who sell and serve beer.
So I know this is probably a common comparison, but is it like the sommelier of beer?
It is an awful lot like the sommelier of beer. I believe even that's somewhere in our About Us page, probably like the second or third sentence. And there were people previous to this that would use the title beer sommelier. And there are still programs that exist with that title, but at least at the time when Cicerone started, there wasn't anything that sort of dictated what that meant if you use that as a title. And so Ray started the program because he saw this need for sort of an organization to examine and certify that individuals actually had some amount of knowledge in order to call themselves some sort of title.
Right. Yeah, Ray's timing was very good, and he filled a niche that I think was obviously there. And why don't you walk us through, if you could, sort of the different certifications that that you get with the Cicerone program, because there's different levels and different, different sort of levels of certification, right?
That is correct. So there are 4 different levels to the program: certified beer server, certified Cicerone, advanced Cicerone, and then master Cicerone. And it's a progression through increasing difficulty of content and material, increasing expectations of depth and breadth of knowledge each step along the way. So obviously you see less and less numbers of people within each level of the program as the levels get harder and harder and harder. Right now we have about 75,000 people certified at that first level, certified beer server. And
that's me. Yay!
Nailing it.
Congratulations, Bruce.
We've got one right here.
I actually took that too. That's the online test, right?
That is correct.
So did you pass?
I did pass.
All right. Hey.
So the first level of the program is entirely online. It is a 60 multiple choice question exam. You have 30 minutes to go through it. It's meant to be rather straightforward, and what we're looking for at that level is just that people are generally able to be conversant about beer flavor and beer styles, and then to know a bit about beer handling, how basic, how some of the more common beer flaws can come about, those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I would say, like, I studied and took that, and I thought it's a great way if you're like a bartender or a server at a beer-centric bar restaurant, or even have a curiosity for that. Definitely recommend taking it because it will force you to kind of know the basics, and they do a great job at kind of giving you those basics. Just so I'm gonna say this at the end, but just so I say it right now, because Cicerone is kind of a hard word. This is, you can find these guys at www.cicerone.org, and that's spelled Cicerone.org.
This is great. I don't even have to like pitch us. It's fantastic.
I know. This is turning into a Cicerone commercial.
Yeah. Can't wait for that $5 bill at the end.
Yeah, tell Ray he owes me.
Definitely.
But, like I said, it did fill a need that was out there, and I was on another podcast with Ray, and we were talking about it, and I was asked point blank, does it make any difference in my hiring if I see somebody with a resume that says there's Cicerone on there? And, you know, I had to think about it for a second, but the answer is yes, it does. It absolutely does. It gives me an idea that this person has some background knowledge that they, like you said, can converse about beer, that they have some interest in beer, because obviously you have to be motivated to, A, take these tests, B, study for these tests, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it does make a difference. You know, so when I'm hiring, and that's on your resume, you've got a foot in the door. Who do you think should be taking this Cicerone? Is this strictly for people in the restaurant bar industry?
When we talk about it as being intended for people that work in the beer industry generally. So it is meant to be a professional certification. We do see some enthusiasts go out and get it, but it's primarily people within the industry that we see getting it. We see it across all sectors of the industry, though. We see people that work in bottle shops or that work in bars. We see people that work for wholesalers, people that work for breweries, people that are beer writers or bloggers or, God forbid, podcasters.
Oh, my God.
The scum
of the earth.
Absolute scum. Destroying media.
So even they sometimes go after some of the certifications. So,
cool. I have a BJCP certification. That's the Beer Judge Certification Program. What is the difference between that and Cicerone?
So when you look at BJCP versus Cicerone, BJCP is an organization that is designed first and foremost to judge homebrew competitions. And so everything within their examination process kind of exists to make that happen. A lot of people will do BJCP things as a way to prepare and practice for the Cicerone exam. Or, you know, you see definitely crossover in terms of the people who are taking BJCP tests and people who are taking Cicerone exams. I know I personally went through the BJCP examination process when I was studying for the certified Cicerone exam a long time ago. But when you look at the differences in material that we cover, lines up very closely in terms of what we test on for beer styles and also what we test on for brewing ingredients and process.
Because you guys actually use the BJCP style guidelines, right?
We do. BJCP is our prime reference for beer style information, and we don't work with them necessarily on the creation of those guidelines, but when they were redeveloping them, we were one of the groups that they said, hey, you know, we'd like you guys to take a look at this just to see if you guys have any feedback. So we do, you know, we work closely with the BJCP on some of that stuff as well.
Cool.
Yeah, and then so you take your, if you want, you take your certified beer server exam, and then after that, they're all in person, correct?
Yes, so all of the exams that have the word Cicerone in the title, those are all in-person exams, in part just because they're longer and more demanding, but then also because each of those exams has a tasting component.
Yeah. Perfect. And you're one of the, I just want to give my history here a little bit. I think there was a new category added, the advanced Cicerone, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
And so it used to be you'd get your certified Cicerone and then you'd be a master Cicerone. And I heard this through the industry, like the master Cicerone is really, really hard. And what, you're one of 11 master Cicerones in the world. It's like, it's crazy. I've heard like horror stories from people about it. It's a really, really difficult exam. So this, I believe the advanced Cicerone was kind of meant to bridge the gap between the two. Is that?
That's a really good way to look at why we created that test. You know, when Ray created the program, he built it with three levels, and there's a pretty big jump from certified beer server to certified Cicerone, but there was a tremendous jump from certified Cicerone to master Cicerone. And especially in the last few years, we saw a lot of people who were like, you know, I've been a certified Cicerone for a while. I feel like I know more than when I took that. I want to demonstrate that I have more knowledge, and they'd go into the master exam, and it was just brutal. Because it is. It's a terrible, terrible, awful experience.
You never would think it would be tough to drink beer, but it's a good exam. It's tough. Yeah, absolutely. But from my knowledge of other people.
I'm sure. The BJCP was that was a hard exam. I took it 17 years ago, but
it's changed a little since then. But
probably. I forgot everything I studied going into it. But it was, you know, it was like an 8-hour exam with tasting every couple hours and all essay, and it was hard. I studied more for that than I did for anything in college, I think. Yeah. And in fairness, got more out of it than anything in college. So.
It certainly has probably helped your career more.
It really has, yeah. This anthropology degree has not been too useful in the bar business. But
well, actually, that's probably the perfect degree to have in the bar business.
Study of man, that's right. Yeah.
So the Cicerone, can you just give kind of the very general basics when you come in? Like if somebody gets their... certified beer server, and then they want to take the class. Like, what can they expect? And
What does that second level exam look like?
Yeah, and I know there's a ton of free resources online. You guys have a great.
Is
website,
it multiple so. Guests?
Is
it?
Yeah. It is not. It is not multiple guests.
B on all of them and get. The 66%.
So a lot of it is fill in the blank on the body portion of the certified Cicerone exam. You could ostensibly fill in B for every single answer. It would not go very well. I'm not sure that any of the answers are just B. But the certified Cicerone exam.
You heard it here on the Beer Opinions podcast. It's not B.
It's not just B.
You know, we provide value to our listeners.
That's right.
So when you walk in to take the certified Cicerone exam, it's about a 4-hour exam. There's a 3-hour written portion that's mostly fill in the blank, but also usually has. Or always has 3 essays on it as well. There's a 45-minute tasting exam that's comprised of 3 different portions, and then there's a short film demonstration to that test. So those are kind of the 3 components of the certified Cicerone exam.
What kind of preparation do you recommend for... Let's start with the online exam. What do you need to know to pass that?
So whenever I talk to somebody about preparing for any of our exams, you know, one of the things that we do offer on our website is a syllabus geared towards each level of the program. And that syllabus covers all of the topics that you need to know, or all of the topics that will potentially be tested on. So whenever somebody's trying to study for one of the exams, I always say start with the syllabus. That's going to give you an in-depth look at the material that you might be tested on. Beyond that, we have lists of some recommended resources for each of the levels. For certified beer server level, it's a relatively limited list of resources because beyond the syllabus, really the only things that we tell people to check out or be familiar with are BJCP guidelines and then potentially Randy Mosher's book, Tasting Beer.
My favorite intro beer book.
It's the second beer book I read.
Yeah.
Kind of was my, and I think for a lot of people, it's a very foundational beer book. So
it is. It's a great book. You know, Randy and Ray are good friends.
It's true. People confuse them often, which is even funnier. But
yeah, and you know, I know them from the Map Room. We've all been regulars at the Map Room for 20 some odd years, and you can probably find any of us there on you know.
Was there
on a lazy
Friday.
Afternoon. I was there Thursday. You know, those two guys really, you know, highly intelligent just passionate beer geeks who really figured out a way to, you know, to educate the country on beer. It's, you know, I do take my hat off to them for that. That is... they were literally just like the rest of us sitting in the Map Room, just drinking beer and, you know, getting way too into beer, and they figured it out. I'm impressed to this day on everything they've accomplished. And Randy is, you know, now making recipes for different breweries. I think he has some ownership in some breweries.
Mm-hmm. He works with Five Rabbit a lot. I know.
Works with Five Rabbit
and Forbidden Root.
Forbidden Root, yep. Right? Yeah. And it's just great to see those guys come out of the Chicago beer scene and the Chicago Beer Society mm-hmm. as well. Which, you know, if you're in Chicago and or you're into beer, check out their website. Join that group. They have been doing it since the 1970s, I think.
Well, and it's funny, too, because, you know, they don't... We do some work with Randy, but Randy doesn't work for us. But you look at kind of over the last 20 years or so, and Ray and Randy's paths have crossed so many times. Ray has a saying, or is I've heard him say before, he's like, you know, whenever I dream up a new business idea... the first thing I'd do is I'd have Randy mock up a logo for it. I don't know if you knew that. Like, Randy has a big background in graphic design.
Randy made every brewery logo in the 1990s in Chicago. I worked at, I'm not even kidding, I worked at three different breweries in the 90s in Chicago, and all of them employed Randy Mosher logos.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else doing it back then.
The Cicerone logo is a Randy Mosher original, so.
Truly a renaissance man.
Yeah. Incredible.
The training for tour guides, the beer tour guides, it's always a copy of his book, Tasting Beer. So, I mean, that's like the basis. If you haven't read it, definitely check it out if you're interested in just such a good resource.
And if you have read it, you should note that there is an updated version of it coming out, spring, with like 30% new material.
Cool.
So...
Awesome.
Something to early plug on Randy's behalf. Yeah. You owe me, Randy.
Yeah, enough kissing Randy's ass. So, you know, it's obvious to us, but maybe we need to explain why this is important. Why educating servers and bartenders in beer is important. I can go on forever about it. As a customer, Bruce, what do you expect a bartender to know?
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's, I would say the importance of it is exponentially growing because, you know, now we have over 4,600 breweries in the United States, new beer styles, new breweries, the breweries are pushing out styles that have, you know, not been drank in this country in a long time or new styles. So it's really important to know the foundation for that. Because when you're a customer and you're given a beer list, and the beer list here at Kaiser is great, but there's, how many beers are on the beer list? I think there's...
Well, total, I don't know, 24 taps.
24 taps.
Maybe 20, 30 bottles.
20, 30 bottles, and you know, in places might have more than that as well. And you go there, and as a customer, you're going to be like, what the heck do I get sometimes if you're not very familiar with it? So the way I look at it is there's a few things. One, if you're a bartender, you need to be able to kind of help people choose. That's one thing, and that's going to be that certification is going to help because you're going to learn different styles of beer if you're not aware of them and their flavor profiles and what they should be. You're also going to be able to maybe push people to the best of the beers. Maybe everybody's tastes are different, and you might have certain flavors that you like versus others, but there's still some shining stars where you're like, oh my God, have you had this X beer on tap? You got to try it. And as a bar owner, I'm sure that's going to help you sell more beer too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're a professional tour guide. A bartender needs to be a tour guide for your beer menu.
Right.
And he needs to, you know, steer someone, navigate them, you know, try to figure out what they want, you know, because your average customer is not a beer geek. And I would say, you know, 90% of my customers at Kaiser Tiger are not into beer like we are, you know? And they come up and go, oh, you know, I'll take an IPA, which, you know, is great. They used to come up and say, I'll take a light beer. I'm happy it's the new light beer is IPA. That's
right,
great.
Right.
But they need some guidance, you know, and they need to, it needs to be done in an unpretentious manner.
Right.
Which mm-hmm. is incredibly important to me.
Right.
You know, there's nothing worse than an overeducated bartender who wants to show off how educated he is. You know, it needs to be approachable. Otherwise, you know, I might as well have gotten into wine.
Cause right.
I don't want to be the wine world. There's a lot of people who want to, oh, you got to treat beer like wine. Well,
nah.
You do in some ways, yeah. You do. but
respect it.
Yes, when it comes to attitude,
but
fuck that wine.
Don't
attitude.
Be pretentious.
I don't like
don't
it.
Be pretentious.
I don't like it.
Well,
beer is
and that,
a democratic beverage.
And that ties to. I we have all of these like stock Ray lines. This I think honestly is one of his best. And I don't know. He came up with this one around the beginning of the program, but the word Cicerone, Ray lifted this word. It's an English word actually that doesn't see a lot of use, but it means a guide. And so one of his early sayings is this sort of mantra of guides, not gods. The idea that people who achieve these certifications are meant to be people that can help guide a customer to a positive beer experience rather than be a god of beer lording their knowledge over someone. So I do think that is extremely important. It's important to be able to deliver knowledge and assistance in a way that is unpretentious and approachable. The other thing to your point that you were making, Pat, that I think is really important is that the reason why it's so important for these people to be educated is not necessarily for the three of us sitting here or for maybe even the majority of the people listening to this podcast. It's for the majority of consumers that maybe aren't super into studying beer or trying lots of new beers, but do want to go out and have a positive beer experience.
Right. Which, by the way, I don't know if people realize this, they drive the market.
Right.
And
right.
They pay my bills.
Yeah, right.
And they,
right.
you know, they are the ones who really, you know, are foreshadowing the trends. You know, this whole IPA thing. Well, you know, all of us have been drinking IPA for 20 years, but now that it is a known term amongst, you know, everyone, you got to take notice of that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so, right. You know, my point being is people listening to this podcast and those of us who are major beer geeks, we're not driving the market per se. And I think a lot of them think that they are. You're not, you know. You might be foreshadowing some things, but until the general public catches on, you know, your buying power is not what's driving the major players. So it's important not to dismiss novice beer drinkers because they have
the
buying power.
The needs of the novice beer drinker.
Right. Yeah. And also I would say, too, the more that we educate people and that we as an I'm, but the more that people are educated, the more that people...
You're educated with this podcast, by
that's
the way.
Right, that's right.
Right?
You are an educator.
That's right.
We're an educator. but the more that people are educated, the more that they are going to understand that craft beer is not just a trend, that it's awesome, and that there's a lot of good, great... I mean, this is the best time to be drinking beer in human history. I do firmly believe that. And whereas if you're not educated, then people will view it as bubblegum vodka and might go away from it. So I do think it's important to educate consumers and to show them that this is really fun, that there's a lot of great beer out there, and that's why it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, the big guys would love nothing more than to have sort of a blowback on craft beer and you know, the Budweiser commercial is an example of it.
What is it? What, the peach show?
Yeah, that? You know, yeah. And, I mean...
Peach pumpkin beer?
Yeah. It's a pretty great commercial. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was hilarous. And it really...
I mean, I can't blame them for...
I don't blame them at all. Yeah.
How much did people talk about it? It did exactly what they wanted.
And it pissed off a bunch of hipsters who don't like being made fun of. But instead, maybe, you know, look back on yourself and go, oh, maybe, you know, if we're a bunch of pretentious pricks about this, there will be a blowback, and people will go, you know, I just want a fucking Bud. You know, I just want a Miller Lite. I just want a light beer. I don't even want to know what light beer it is. I just want a light beer. And we don't want to get back to that. So I think to be as inclusive and, you know, unpretentious about your beer knowledge, it's just incredibly important. Yeah. Any bartenders who are listening, you know, don't talk down, talk to, right? Yeah. That's what I tell my staff. Answer questions and be a general guide. And then, you know, try to suss out if they want more from you, then you give them more.
Yep.
But a lot of times they don't want more.
It's the hospitality industry.
It certainly is,
you
right?
You want to be giving your customer a good experience. And part of that is being able to help them navigate your menu, whether it's food or whether you're a beer bar or whether you do like whatever product it is that you sell. You know, it's not just beer right now that is getting more complex and more, in some ways, esoteric, in that we're seeing renaissance more interesting processes and ingredients being used and all of these different flavors. It's something that is just, you know, it exists across food and beverage right now. Bruce, you said it's one of the best times to be a beer drinker right now. I'd say it's like one of the best times to be a person who consumes things right now.
Right.
If you like coffee or if you like whiskey or if you like food, like it's
great point.
It's even donuts.
It's a great time to be eating donuts. Yeah. So we're in an era of elevated food and people like seeking out these experiences. I know I don't have time to know all there is to know about coffee or whiskey or donuts. So, you know, it's important to have those people within each of those industries that can guide you, because you can't be an expert of all of those things.
Right. Go ahead.
Oh, no.
Well, I was going to say, I think it is something that we can take from the world of sommeliers, because I've had really great experience with soms, they know that I don't know, shit about wine, and are really nice about it. I feel like the beer people are not necessarily on, doing the same thing, and are, take a lesson from your local somm. Go to a wine bar and talk to the somm there, and I guarantee they will not talk down to you. They will be very patient and ask what your preferences are, and if you, want a little background on the wine, they'll give it to you. If you don't, they'll leave you alone, and that's kind of, I think, a great way to go about it.
I was just going to say, too, that the other thing is you can be educated. I'm just trying to create a segue here, so
segue away.
So, like, the one of the...
Non-sequitur alert.
If you're trained, you're going to know when there's off flavors in beer. God forbid it happens. But I just find it one of the more... I'm just staring this here. No, I just wanted to bring this up because I think it's one of the more interesting parts about the Cicerone program is... if you do decide to go down that route, is kind of being able to understand some of the off flavors in beer and how they, and I just wanted to, Pat, just to get your kind of maybe a little background about why that is a part of the program, and maybe just give some very basics about it. You actually taught me just a few weeks ago in a class, and I was really bad at recognizing these flavors, but it was great education about it, so...
So that is one thing that we do a fair amount of training on, off-flavor recognition, and in some cases flavor recognition, because it is important not just to learn about flavors that are bad. We also would like to be able to appreciate and note flavors that are good when we find them in our beer. But at all of the upper levels of the program, Certified Cicerone, Advanced Cicerone, and Master Cicerone, we do testing on a range of different flavors that we expect people to be able to pick up if they find them in a beer. And one of the things about being specific in terms of, not just having people be able to say, oh yeah, this beer tastes kind of buttery, but having people be able to say, this beer has diacetyl in it. It's important to be able to recognize those flavors as they come up, because they're indicative of what may or may not have gone wrong if that's a flavor that's not supposed to be there. When you point to a flavor like diacetyl or butyric or acetaldehyde or indole or any of these like named flavor compounds, there are a few distinct causes of them in most cases. And so if you are somebody who works at a bar and it's like, this beer doesn't usually have this character, we found this flavor in it, could be a flaw on the brewery end, and if it is, hopefully they've already recognized that and are dealing with it, but it could be a flaw introduced through dirty draft lines or something else. So being able to recognize flavors and pin that back to some sort of solution, it is really important to being better able to interact with beer at a high level.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I would recommend, I went, Cicerone does offer these off-flavor classes around the country, I believe. But also So you can do that, but they also have kits that you can purchase as well.
We do. We sell. So when we do our off-flavor training, we do what's referred to as pure compound training, where we use these chemical pure flavor spikes. So within one given spike, it will allow you to add just diacetyl or just acetaldehyde to about a liter of beer. And we work with a company that's based out of the UK called Araxa to produce these kits on a smaller scale so that we can sell them to people who are studying for our tests and people that want to just learn more. It is a thing that it's interesting in any of those classes that we do on off flavors or on flavor training or sensory. We'll see maybe half of the people will be people that are actively preparing for our exams. Some of the people there will be people that work in the industry and want to know more, but we'll see just homebrewers or consumers even that are like, I'm just into beer, and so I wanted to come out and drink some really bad beer to learn more, which is awesome. Cool to see.
That was me. I was not buzzed after that.
Most people are not.
Yeah.
It's a tough crowd.
It was
tough on the stomach, that whole course.
Well, and I also think that was a great show of your palate, and if you do want to learn more about beer, how important it is to keep on pushing your palate, not only for off flavors, but flavors in general. But when I was there, I was terrible at picking up these flavors, and they have you take a little exam to quiz you on it, just for your own knowledge. But the brewers there, and there were a lot of brewers in this class, were nailing it because their palates were trained, and they knew precisely what they were because they've done this before, and so it just goes to show you that practice makes perfect for that. So
yeah, and I mean, brewers are tasting every day looking for those flavors. That's that's all part of being a brewer and recognizing flaws in your own beer. I will say, on a personal note, I can always spot someone at the bar, especially at Patty Long's, who's just taken the sensory course at Siebel, or just just gone through one of your off-flavor courses, and they're sniffing and tasting their beer, and they're going, I'm getting a little diacetyl in this beer. And then
you got a dirty draft line pack.
They've got it on the brain, then I'll taste it and I'll go, I think that's just caramel malt, but I'll look into it.
I used to do
they're on the hunt for
all really
flavors.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, God, people come out of those classes.
It's not a bad thing.
You do. You come out on like kind of the hyper alert.
Yeah.
And I don't always say it, but I have concluded off flavor classes before with like a little speech on like, you're going to go back out into the beer drinking world. Don't expect that every beer that you're going to have is going to have an off flavor in it and be searching for it and be like, before I was blind, but now I see, I see all that is bad with these beers. So, because in a lot of cases, you're going to come up short, which is a good thing.
Yeah. But sometimes you're not, it will ruin you for things like a draft beer at the ball game.
Oh, yeah.
Or, college a draft bars, beer at your local
bars.
Dive bar.
Yeah.
Makes it harder.
We ruin people all the time, and they come back in here and go, I had a spot in Oktoberfest at this other bar. It didn't taste anything like this. It's like, I'm pretty sure it's all from the same batch.
It's May, so that's, it's a bad choice.
Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
it will ruin you. And, those of us who recognize off flavors, I was in my favorite dive bar last night, and I was drinking cans of Daisy Cutter, because I can't touch the drafts there anymore.
Still going to it. Still supporting them.
I love my dive bar. I love my dive bars, but man, they gotta clean those lines, and they don't.
Nope.
But that's why it's a dive bar, right? They don't care.
It'd probably change the vibe, even though you wouldn't be able to see it if they started cleaning the lines.
If they had super clean lines, I would no longer call it a dive bar.
I'm pretty sure the super clean lines also come with like the flat screen TVs and doubling the price of the beer.
Sometimes not.
Not always.
No. It comes with paying more for a quality line cleaner, which thank God we have a few here in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean,
some markets don't have one, period, you know?
Well, you were talking about New Orleans, the other.
I was talking about New Orleans, and I don't drink a lot of draft beer down there.
Yeah. I mean, and whether or not a bar has a good line cleaning program often isn't about, you know, it often has less to do with whether or not there are flat screen TVs or what the prices of their beer are. It's an allocation of resources. You know, is beer quality important to you? If it is, then hopefully you're taking care of the beer. There are also studies that show that you tend to sell more draft beer if your lines are clean, and so it does affect your bottom line too, but like, who cares about numbers? Like, that's silly shit. So
but honestly, for some people, it is just not knowing that their line cleaner is doing a poor job.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of line cleaners out there doing a poor job.
At the certified Cicerón level, we test really closely on line cleaning process and sort of all of the protocol that needs to be followed, all of the parameters that need to be met in order to do proper line cleaning. And it's not necessarily that we expect that certified Cicerons are going to be out there doing lots of line cleaning. More, it's that we want them to potentially be able to oversee somebody doing line cleaning at their bar to verify that they are doing it correctly. Because like you said, there are a lot of people that don't.
That's 90% of it. Yeah. If bar owners actually are there during, you know, during the cleaning of their lines and converse with the line cleaner, and most of these line cleaners know what they're supposed to do. They just, like everyone, slough off, especially when there's zero supervision. And sometimes there's zero supervision with these guys. You know, luckily I have a guy I can trust and who, you know, literally, sometimes I feel like I work for my line cleaner, not the other way around. Brandon, I use Draft Science, and we had Jay on this podcast. Brandon is his partner, he's my line cleaner. And literally, I will get phone calls from him at all hours going, look, you know, you got to replace this. You got to do this. You got to do that. And I, you know, and it's great, and I love it. And but he's one of a kind. They're rare.
Yes.
You know, they really are. I feel bad for a lot of markets because it's literally, you know, and that's why I just keep talking about it, because if you demand it as a bar owner, it will happen. And you know, you might have to pay a little bit more. But, you know, there are markets out there that don't even have a choice. There is no quality line cleaner. You know, anyway. Am I belaboring the point? Because I hope so.
It really is. Like, you can't overstate how important good draft cleaning or good draft maintenance is. And yes, you cannot overstate the importance of it. Because there are so many markets where it's just not done appropriately.
They're really, it's a problem.
Yes.
Green apple everywhere. Buttery. What are the popular?
Diacetyl, so buttery butterscotch is a pretty common flavor that you see in heavily infected draft wines. And then usually some sort of acid, either lactic acid or acetic acid. So either kind of like a tangy yogurt-likeness, or acetic has more of a vinegary character to it. And those in combination with that butter or butterscotch from diacetyl are some of the most common tells from a heavily infected draft system. In a lightly infected draft system, you just kind of see a general dulling or muddying of flavors. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is that's wrong with the system. Just if you're familiar with the beer if you're familiar with that product, it's kind of like, it doesn't taste quite right. Like, I can't tell. Yeah. I can't put my finger on what it is.
Yeah, but no, I 100% agree with that. And I always get that little tang, you know. It's like a zingy tartness that, you know, and that's why people get away with it, because it's not wholly unpleasant. It's not like it tastes like ass or something, you know. It tastes like...
It can, but yes.
Well, it can. You know, that's what they've gone too far, yeah. But sometimes
we got a sour on tap today. Right. A little lactic acid.
Or, no, you know, just like you can almost call it a citrus hint sometimes on a beer that shouldn't have that, you know? And certainly butterscotch is not a offensive flavor. And one that, you know, there's big arguments about whether or not it's acceptable in beer. It is produced in every beer. You know, there are ways to get that diacetyl out of your beer. Some people in some styles, you know, like I said, we could debate this, whether or not any diacetyl is acceptable. I feel it is acceptable in some styles.
It's a part of the profile of a number of styles, particularly English styles and Czech premium pale lager.
But, yes.
But in beers where it's not supposed to be there, it's not supposed to be there.
True.
That's really the long and short of it. I mean, and that's one of the things, too, why I try to be very careful when I'm teaching about flavor training to not use the term off flavors, because most of those flavors, acetaldehyde included, is a component of some beers somewhere, that low levels of that are appropriate within a small collection of styles. And so to just broadband say, well, diacetyl is an off flavor, it's like, well, it depends what the beer is.
Right.
But when you have an egregiously high level of bacterial produced diacetyl in a beer that is not supposed to have any, I would call that an off flavor.
Without a doubt. My point being, it's, you know, butterscotch doesn't taste awful.
No.
I agree.
It doesn't.
I agree. I get your back.
But yeah, once you go through the sensory program and then can identify it, you will not be able to tolerate it.
Yeah.
Right? That's just how it works.
So, Pat, do you have any, like, imagine in your position you're drinking a fair amount of beer. And taste, just for educational purposes.
Absolutely.
You know, not for personal pleasure. But
drinking with thinking.
It's
tasting, man.
But I just wanted to ask, like, is there anything right now, like a trend in the beer scene or a particular, just your personal tastes or flavors that you're really enjoying? Any particular style, it could be time of year, it could be anything.
I like beer I can drink. I say that sort of tongue in cheek, but I absolutely mean it. You know, the idea of, or sort of the concept of session beer as a thing in the U.S. has been picking up in popularity a little bit in the last year or two, I would say. You know, you see a lot of people making session IPAs, but also other more quote unquote sessionable styles. Some of the lower alcohol English styles or some lower alcohol lagers. There are a lot of people that kind of chase after that crazy hoppy double IPA or that super boozy bourbon barrel imperial stout. And that's like awesome. I love tasting those like half an ounce maybe. But by and large, because like you said, there is a fair part of my job that does involve drinking. It's very rare that I want to sit down and drink 10 ounces of a 15% alcohol beer.
Sure.
One, because that would ruin all of my mornings, but two, just because it's fatiguing. So
right.
I really dig on beers that are a bit lower in alcohol, that are still, I really don't want to say full flavored, but still kind of like robust and interesting and characterful in their flavor profiles, whether that's a Pilsner or a Schwarzbier or a special bitter, like what have you, just for that style manages to achieve a full and exciting flavor profile even at a lower alcohol.
I mean, it certainly shows off the brewer's art much more.
Absolutely.
When they can make an incredibly flavorful beer at a low alcohol content. That, you know, I've said this before, the easiest styles to make in the whole world are Russian Imperial Stouts and Double IPAs. They're easy.
You can hide a whole lot of evil in a double IPA.
You can hide a whole lot of evil, and you don't really have to measure much. You just throw it all in, because more the better. And you know, there's a place for those beers. I'm not
Absolutely.
Knocking those beers, and you know, like you, Pat, I don't have that place very often anymore.
No.
I am an old man with children. And
live a long time, a long, healthy life. And,
well, not even that, but I have to be up in the morning.
Let's not be unrealistic.
Yeah,
here.
Come on. Sorry,
guys.
Throw expectations on me. I'm not running for Jesus over here.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that, you know, and when you drink for a living like we do, you have to have your facilities, you know, your faculties with you.
Yeah.
I think is the actual word.
And facilities too.
Facilities,
that's important.
You need those close by too, as your bladder gets smaller. And you know, I'm finding myself at these festivals chasing down low alcohol beers. There, and you know what? There's never a line for those.
No, it's right? great.
It's right. great.
It's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, it's all, you should trademark that beer name, though, by the way. Hide a lot of evil or whatever.
I've been saying that for a long time, about, especially about IPAs. Like, you can, with a lot of hops, you can hide a whole lot of evil in a very, very hoppy beer.
You really can. Every time someone who's new to homebrewing, you know, is going, oh, I'm going to brew my first batch of beer. What should I make?
Like
Russian Imperial Stout. Yeah. Russian Imperial Stout.
It's going to turn out.
Just cram that mash tun full of malt. It doesn't even matter how much hops you put in there.
It's going to turn out all right.
It's going to turn out, yeah. It's going to turn out okay.
Maybe.
Maybe not. Oh, man.
You might have a nice balsamic vinegar, but you never know. You know. So I think we need to take a quick break just to refill our beers because we don't have a server over here. We need some beers. Give us 2 seconds. All right, we're back. Our beers are refreshed, and we just wanted to come back and go through some closing statements. Chris, what is going on with, or Bruce, I should say. This is the other confusing thing. He has two names, Chris and Bruce. What is going on with Chicagoland Beer Tours?
Oh, man. Right now, we're just rocking and rolling. You know, we got our three tours, Bucktown and Wicker Park, Lakeview Lincoln Park, and Loop South Loop. Learn about Chicago history. Also taste a bunch of craft beer. We try to keep it as local and as much variety as we can based on the places we visit.
Cool. Where do people book a Chicagoland Beer Tour?
They can go right at our website, www.chicagobeerexperience.com.
Sweet. All right. Pat, what is up and coming for the Cicerone program?
Well, one of the things that we were talking about whilst refreshing our beers was kind of some of the new things that are coming online for Cicerone, and this may not be extremely pertinent to everybody that's listening to this podcast in English, but Cicerone is in the process of doing translation of a number of our materials. Right now we're finishing up translation of our materials into Spanish. If you haven't traveled in Central or South America recently, the kind of the nascent beer scene in those countries is very interesting and very exciting. There's actually a lot of, to be honest, a lot of American style IPA being brewed in those countries. IPA is huge right now. So
it's a pretty great turn of events that people are now emulating the U.S., right? Yeah. I mean, for years we emulated the great beer countries of Germany, Belgium, and England, and now even those countries are emulating us. Well, maybe not Germany.
Well,
they're still like, oh, what else? These Americans, their beer.
No, but so we were also talking about this article over the break about that discussed kind of what craft beer means both here and in other parts of the world, and sort of the global perspective that this guy put forward was that at this point, craft beer in most countries, Germany included, means American style hoppy ales. Like, that is what craft beer is in other parts of the world. It's a very interesting and ironic turn of events.
I'll take it. And that's very cool. This, you know, to think that the Cicerone program has gone from an idea probably in the map room to a global entity is it's pretty rad.
Yep, and definitely check them out, www.cicerone.org, that's spelled C-I-C-E-R-O-N-E.org. Awesome, a lot of resources there too.
Cool.
Pat, what about you? Anything on deck for Patty's and Kaiser, Patty Long's?
Yes, my shameless plug is going to be for our annual Three Floyds Tap Takeover.
I cannot wait.
I know. Tap Takeovers are like, oh, it's very passe and very, it's been done, but they're still fun. And we've got 10 Three Floyds beers and a bunch that I've never even heard of. So it should be a good time. That is September 30th, Friday, September 30th, 7 p.m. We'll be tapping all of those. So.
So Friday, September 30th, 2016, if you're listening to this podcast in the future, but if it's September 30th, 2017, you should still stop in or
beyond that. Yeah, still so Stuart, stop in because you'll still have Three Floyds beers. At some,
so I'm putting a timeline on Stuart getting this podcast out. Yeah. Gotta get this out.
That's basically what it comes down to, guys.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening. As always, you know, our beer opinions are our own, although in my case, they greatly affect what I do and probably everyone else sitting at this table. So. Thanks, everybody, and we will hit you up next time.
She's so